You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Buckeye Talk is about to begin. Hey, 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 come on in.
Welcome back to Buckeye Talk. I'm Stephen Means, and that's Nathan Baird. And we talked with a bevy of players on Thursday afternoon, and we talked defensive side for the Friday pod. This weekend / Monday pod, we're going to be talking offense. That means talking with Marvin Harrison Jr. Excuse me. He though was in the Woody today. He was there. We didn't talk to him. Unless you just said hi as he was walking by. But we talked with Brian Hartline. We talked with Brandon Ennis and Carnell Tate for the first time in their careers. Jaden Ballard also spoke. But I think, Nathan, I've been thinking about this as we've been talking about this wide receiver room over the last couple of weeks here. And it's a young room, right? The only guy who's actually played meaningful snaps in a significant way is Emeka Ebuka over the last couple of years here, because even Jaden Ballard, I know he's in year four, but he hasn't played a lot, at least not offensively. He was the punt returner for a lot of the last year. But I've been comparing this room a lot to 2022, where Emeka Ebuka is the Jackson Smith Najigba in this situation, while Carnell Tate and Brandon Ennis are the Marvin Harrison Jr., Emeka Ebuka, but also there's just like, as C.J. Barnett put it in his black stripe removal, man-child named Jeremiah Smith that you add into this equation here. But when we were talking with Brian Hartline, one about Brandon Ennis and Carnell Tate, Jeremiah Smith, he just seemed a little bit more pep in his step and how he was talking about this wide receiver room and how excited he was about it. Yes, it's young, but almost not expecting any drop-off in terms of production for what we should expect from this wide receiver room in 2020.
And Hartline is the kind of guy who, if he thought that people were getting a bit big for their britches, or to use a term from where I'm from, or just big heads, you know, if the hype was getting out ahead of things, he would be the kind of guy to come in and talk in a different way. Like, he would come in and be a little bit more subdued and a little bit more about the grind and the message and all that stuff. And I thought it was a little bit revelatory that he came in today and was not, and he says good things about each individual player, obviously. But I think his overall point was that the culture seems right in that group, that you've got, even though they're young guys, they're guys with a pretty professional mindset, guys who take their job seriously, guys who take their development seriously. That's certainly something that everyone has been talking about as it relates to Jeremiah Smith, and who's only been on campus a couple months, but has really impressed people from a maturity standpoint. And that's something that's the way maybe it is the most similar to me from that 2022 kind of year, where you had people talked very highly of Emeka Ebuka and Marvin Harrison Jr. and the maturity that they came in with and where that set them up for their second year. And I think Hartline, the way he talked today to me, I thought was a good sign, and just that he is in a good place with where he thinks this group is, just mentally and in terms of just intangibles, that this is a room that has its head on straight. And because, as he said later, that there's a lot of expectations, the assumptions are high. People just assume these guys are going to come in with having very little experience and be able to just go out, and now they're starters and now they're going to put up big numbers. And there's a mix of that being probably a little presumptive, but also probably a little predictive for good reason. And now they find out where it falls in between. I thought his demeanor today was interesting, because this could have been a thing where he came in and was like, well, we got a long way to go to figure out, like, do we have three guys who are gonna, you know, be full-time starters? We got a long way to go. We've got to get these 4, 5, 6 guys up to the next level. And we're not sure whether these guys can do the blocking and the route running with precision and all those things. Like, and he may harbor some hesitations individually about every player that they're trying to get better. But in general, I thought it was a really encouraging way for him to talk about the receiver room. And that may sound like, duh, it's like, it's because of what they all are as prospects. But again, like I said before, you get to know these guys over time, and you know how Brian would have come in and talked about these guys if he thought that we were getting ahead of ourselves and he thought that they needed to hear that message. And he decided that the message he wanted them to hear was, I'm proud of these guys and encouraged by where it's going.
Amongst those wide receivers he spoke about today, and we'll obviously get into what he had to say about Brandon Innes and Cardinal Tate as well, as two guys who are expected to have bigger roles this year. But we also spoke with Bryson Rogers for his first time as an Ohio State football player. And we talked with Brian Hartline just about that entire sequence of events of him. Basically, all last year, we were hearing good things about him. Going back to fall camp, when Emeka Ebuka had good things to say about him. I know when you were down there in Dallas, Brian Hartline was saying good things about Bryson Rogers. And so it was kind of a shocker when he decided to jump into the transfer portal at the end of the 2023 season. But I think after about a couple of weeks there, he decided to return to Ohio State. The message I kind of got from Brian Hartline and how he answered that question, but then also how Bryson Rogers was talking about that situation, was it sounds great to be a part of the best wide receiver room in the country. Right. And when you're getting recruited, that sounds great, because it's like, oh, you're seeing all these first rounders. I'm going to come be next. And Brian Hartline was saying a lot of this stuff last spring as well about learning how to work at that level. But it's a whole nother conversation when you're actually in it and you see actually what it takes to get into this room. And then sometimes in this new world of college football, where there is the transfer portal, where there is NIL and all these other different factors that can come into place, when it doesn't happen automatically for you, it can be very easy to feel like you are not valued at the place you are at.
Yeah, you've got to have a different mental toughness in this receiver room right now. You just do. Like, it's and they've had a pretty good track record. I know they lost some guys to transfer this year, but they've had a pretty good track record of bringing in guys who should expect the world, and who, in the case of, let's say, Marvin Harrison Jr., then eventually go achieve it, but are, I don't know if content is the right word to say. I wouldn't say they're content to sit for a year, but I think they understand it. You know, you keep fighting to get on the field, but you understand why you have to wait behind the other guys who are walking up to the podium at the NFL draft. Like, those, you're a freshman. That guy's been doing this for 3 years. He's going to go in front of you, and then you're going to come in behind and have multiple great seasons. Like, that's the dynamic. And I would give Hartline credit for whatever he has done in that room to make that possible, because I think that's not easy. I think that's an underrated aspect of what he's done. Because it's one thing to say that he went out and just brought in 5-star talent repeatedly. Because once you do it a couple times and you're getting the good quarterbacks too, then, you know, that could be a yin and yang thing. Some of that can feed on itself, certainly giving him credit for the extent to which he's done it. But it's important. You have to go get those guys, and you got to develop them. But there's something else to be said for not having a whole lot of situations where a guy is disgruntled and leaves before you find out, and leaves you with a hole. I think that's the way I think I'm most saying it. You know, yes, they've had guys leave. You know, Jameson Williams leaves, but it didn't leave them with a hole, and they were fine, even though he went off and had an amazing season. And they lost a couple guys this offseason. But it's not like we're looking around thinking like, oh, man, that really tore into their depth. Like, what are they going to do on the two deep? They've really got to figure something out. It's still more like, which guy isn't going to really be on the two deep that deserves to be there? They keep enough talent around. They keep the right talent around. They keep the vibe in that room, the culture in that room. It's an overused term, but it seems to be a really, really healthy one. And I think he deserves credit in addition to the other things he already gets credit for. I think that's been an important part of the success he's had.
So just, I want to bring Jaden Ballard into this section of the conversation, because Jaden Ballard has also been here for 4 years and it hasn't necessarily popped yet for him as a wide receiver. And it just feels like there's a true freshman and two second year guys who are ready to jump him. And maybe if Bryson Rogers is doing some of the things that Carnell Tate called him one of the shiftiest receivers on the team. You know, there's obviously a lot of other guys have had great things to say about him as well. Jermaine Matthews even talked highly about Bryson Rogers and what he's done as a guy who came here understanding that this was probably going to be a long-term development project and he shouldn't be so worried about the right now. But I'm going to ask you, understanding that everybody's path is different, but we're also talking about a room where it's very easy to get lost in the shuffle because there seems to be first-rounders coming, five-star recruits, first-round draft picks coming in basically every year here. What should be the expected path if you are a top 100 receiver entering Ohio State's wide receiver room? If we think in most situations, unless you're Jeremiah Smith heralded, you know you're probably not going to see the field much as a freshman, and that's perfectly fine. How should the next 2 years of your career, 2 or 3 years of your career go? And at what point do you think, Nathan, where they haven't gotten on the field and you probably you think the moment has maybe passed them?
Yeah, I don't think that there's an answer to that. I don't think there, because let's go back to 2022. Let's go back to 2021. Actually, that's the better example. If Chris Olave doesn't come back that year, it opens doors for other people. Like somebody else, and maybe there's a bigger role for some of those true freshmen that we were just talking about, Marvin Harrison Jr. or Emeka Buka, because Chris Olave takes up a lot of snaps, obviously. Like, every dynamic is different. There are times when Jeremiah Smith coming in would have had a harder time breaking through to be a starter or a big part of the offense right away than he will this year. There's less tenure. There's less, you know, seniority in that room. It's Emeka Buka, and then it's up for grabs after that. Mm-hmm. And so I don't think there's any, it's going to be a case by case basis. And the best example of it is still, it's just Marvin Harrison Jr. Like, you can't, it's the best receiver in program history is the way he leaves here. It's the way he's thought of on his way out the door. And for most of his freshman year, like, we weren't talking about him that much.
Yeah.
Like, we weren't. It was just kind of like we'll get to them when we get to them. Like, that's a next year thing. Like, this team is on its way to the playoff, maybe, if it can beat Michigan. Oops. And like, we may not see him at all this year. Like, it was just going to be, you know, garbage time stuff. And then look at what he does immediately from that point on. Like, second year, it just takes off. And there's going to be a time. I don't think that alone, if Jeremiah Smith comes in and has a big productive year as a freshman, doesn't mean that Marvin Harrison Jr. couldn't have done that if he'd had the opportunity. It's just a different dynamic in the room right now, a different dynamic on the roster. So I wouldn't get too bogged down. I mean, we just had this discussion on the Friday pod as it relates to CJ Hicks, and mm-hmm. Timing is everything. There's guys who walk in right away. You know, Denzel Burke was not as high of a prospect in terms of his ranking and all that stuff as any number of other guys who are on this roster right now. But why did he start opening night as a true freshman? I mean, yes, he was underrated, right? That was part of it. But also, the opportunity was there. They had guys who would have started who couldn't play that night. And somebody had to start at corner, and they were putting out some untested guys, and he was one of them. And it's all about opportunity, and he took advantage of his opportunity in a big way. But sometimes you don't get that opportunity. Sometimes the guy in front of you stays healthy. And, you know, look at this defensive line this year. Kenyatta Jackson, Caden Curry, like in another year, I mean, they would be two of the big topics of this spring if the assumption that we all had that JT Tuimoloau and Jack Sawyer were three-year players had unfolded. And right now, they're just kind of like, oh, it's interesting that these two, they have really good backup defensive ends. But if that weren't the case, if those guys had left, it would be, oh, this is their moment. This is their time has arrived. It's all a matter of timing. Timing is a huge part of this. In every discussion that we have to remember timing, whether it's talking about coaches and assistant coaches and things Ryan Day does with his staff, if you're talking about recruiting, if you're talking about transfer portal, like timing is a big X factor that often gets overlooked. And I think that it's the ultimate answer to the question you're asking.
Okay, let's take a quick break and then we can come back and talk about some guys whose timing is right on time because we're expecting them to potentially have breakout seasons here on Buckeye Talk.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So last year, last fall, we get Marvin Harrison Jr. for the first time in fall camp. You know, we're asking him questions about the upcoming season and, you know, repeating what he did as a sophomore and doing it as a junior and what do he think of the quarterbacks and all that stuff. You know, lots of fun stuff, whatever. But I asked Marvin Harrison Jr. what he thought of Carnell Tate. And instead of giving, you know, the typical, oh, yeah, he looks really good for a freshman. He's coming along great. He's got a bright future. Marvin Harrison Jr. decided to jump out the window and say, that kid is where I was last year. And I clarified, you mean when you were as a sophomore and he's a freshman? He's like, yeah, last year, 2022. That's what we're talking about here. And it's like, from that point on, it was like, okay, well, we know who's next after Carnell Tate. And maybe it didn't pop the way that it did for Garrett Wilson in terms of consistency in that role, but he did have a bigger role than we had seen some freshmen have in years past simply because of injuries. We saw him in a slot at times. We saw him outside at times. Though he never really had that pop moment that we even saw Jackson Smith Ojigba and Marvin Harrison Jr. and Mecca Buka had. That's just how the season went. Brandon Ennis, on the other hand, did not early enroll, though he was around at times. And I was actually talking with him about this after he was done. He went to American Heritage High School, which is a pretty prominent high school in South Florida. Kids are not allowed to early enroll from out of that high school, but just the way his high school classes were set up, it just let him be up here every so often. So he was around. He just wasn't a participant until he got up here for good in the June. And so it maybe put him a little bit behind where Carnell Tate was, even as a five-star recruit. But even he flashed last year against Purdue. He had the touchdown. And now both of those guys, I mean, we've been hearing about Carnell Tate for a year, Nathan, but the way Ryan Day talked about Brandon Ennis on Tuesday and then the way Brian Hartline was talking about him on Thursday, it feels like both of these guys are primed for a pretty breakout year. And we did this in one of our videos. And I just want to have this conversation with you here as well. Not even so much who's going to have the better year, but just who is more set up to have the type of second-year breakout that we've seen from guys like Garrett Wilson, Chris Olave to an extent in 2019 as well, Marvin Harrison Jr. and Jackson Smith Ojigba.
Well, again, I think that it could be somewhat dependent on things out of their control. It's or more to the point, what is Emeka Buka this year? Is Emeka Buka a capital S, capital R slot receiver? And that's his primary, almost exclusive function in this offense. Because if it is, Brandon Ennis might not play as much. But if they start to see Brandon Ennis developing the right way, and if they see an opening to move Emeka Buka around, if they think that his fit in the offense occasionally as an outside receiver is superior to some of the other options that you could have there, that's the open door for Brandon Ennis to have a bigger second year. And I do think that's on the table. The idea that Ibuka could do a little bit of what Marvin Harrison Jr. did, it's like the opposite of what Marvin Harrison Jr. did last year, being an outside receiver that they tried to get in the slot as much as possible to get some matchups, you know, do the opposite with him. A slot receiver who you push outside to try to get some matchups there, whether that's, you know, some speed agility things that you can take advantage of there against a bigger corner, something like that. And then you are able to do that because you are secure in what Brandon Ennis is and where he is in his career. I mean, ultimately, you look at 2021, what led to the Jacksonville, what pushed Garrett Wilson outside? Some of it was that it made him more dangerous weapon in some ways in the offense, but also Jacksonville Ojigba was ready. Like, they saw what they needed to see. They wanted him to be a guy on the field getting 70 reps a game. Like, he was ready for that role. It was the superior role to the other options that they had. It allowed them to do that. And I think that there's an possibility that you could get to August, and we're talking about Brandon Ennis that way, that maybe he has come along to the extent that, I'm not saying it makes Emeka Ebuka exclusively an outside receiver, but I think it allows them to mix and match some things, be more multiple with their packages with the receivers than they have been really any year since 2019.
So I'm ready to say Ohio State's top four receivers this year are Emeka Ebuka, Carnell Tate, Brandon Ennis, and Jeremiah Smith. Which brings up the 2022 point again. I'm going to be stuck on that with the wide receivers for a while here. But because we had these conversations about Emeka Ebuka and Julian Fleming, right? And one of the scenarios we looked at is, well, which one is on the field? Well, where is Jackson Smith and the Jigba, right? Is he outside or is he inside? Because if he's outside, maybe it's Emeka Ebuka. If he's inside, maybe it's Julian Fleming. Or maybe Julian Fleming and Emeka Ebuka just split the Z spot. And unfortunately, he got hurt in the first quarter of the Notre Dame game, so we never got to find out the actual answer to that question. It just kind of solved itself in that situation. And it was fine, because you had two five-stars and a son of a Hall of Famer, which we're not hoping on any injuries for Emeka Ebuka this year at all. But if he gets abducted by aliens, what's your wide receiver trio? Two five-stars and Carnell Tate. They're going to be okay. But I am wondering if we see a similar situation to what we would have seen with Jack, because Jackson Smith and Ojigba and Emeka Ebuka even are there similar body types, similar skill sets there where they're yards out with the catch guys, but they can also play inside and outside if necessary. If who is on the field is where is Emeka Ebuka? Because it seems like he can play X, he can play Z, and he can be in the slot. So if he's at X, maybe it is Carnell Tate and Brandon Ennis out there. But if he's at Z on any given snap, then maybe it's Jeremiah Smith and Brandon Ennis. Or if he's in the slot, it's Jeremiah Smith and Carnell Tate. And then, you know, Jaden Ballard and Bryson Rogers, they can get the five pretty easily here. But also, Kojo Antwi and Keon Graves are still sticking around. Maybe they take a jump this year as well. Maybe you get the six. But I am now thinking about those four, Nathan, the same way we thought about Jackson Smith Ojigba, Marvin Harrison Jr., Julian Fleming and Emeka Ebuka. I just think in this situation, like, Marvin Harrison Jr. was his own thing at that point, and it's because we had just seen so much. But now it's like Emeka's Emeka, and those other three guys, just because of where they are in their careers, are just kind of wherever Emeka is, that depends on which of those two are on the field in any given snap.
I mean, the challenger to that concept is Jaden Ballard. And I wasn't at his table today and haven't had a chance to listen back to that. So I don't really know what he got into as far as where he feels that he is. And I was bouncing around a little bit, so I didn't even really get much from Heartline on him, although he did talk about him in the context of those sort of cultural things that he is liking from the group in general, that he's seeing some kind of a different version of him from a, you know, a maturity standpoint and the things that he's locked in on and focused on. So he would be the one. If just from a, if that's what you need from that receiver in the offense, and it's not, and it might be, again, if you're being more multiple than you've been in 5 years, then there's more role for him there. But I also think you might be right that, I mean, this is setting up for, we do this every year a little bit, unless it's just so painfully obvious. But anytime there is some of that, those possibilities, we look at the possibilities and we say, oh, maybe this is a year where they mix it up a little bit more, and then they just end up playing the same guys. And they don't get multiple. They lock in three guys, and maybe like last year, a fourth guy like Carnell Tate sneaks in there, but it's pretty rigidly three guys. So I'm open to it. That's how it ends. But I think there's still opportunity. I mean, Jaden Ballard, this is where his opportunity is. Someone like him, those third year guys that you talked about, Graves and Antwi, that haven't really had a role yet. Like, this is where they could, you know, Bryson Rogers, you know, get yourself on the map here this spring. Because again, as we've seen with Emeka Buka, with Jackson Smith and Jigba, like, you sometimes need more than you hope you need at the start of the year.
And then last thing, just because he's not the quarterback's coach and he's the co-offensive coordinator, but Chip Kelly's here now, so we're probably asking him offensive coordinator questions over Brian Hartline. But I was not Brian Hartline the entire time. I stayed over there for like 3 minutes, and then a lot of people started coming around, and we don't all need to be at the same spot because that's not a great way to, you know, maximize our time there. But did Brian Hartline get asked any questions about Will Howard, Devin Brown, and any of the quarterback situation?
You know, I wasn't at his table the whole time either. I hopped over to talk to Gabe Powers at one point, some other people. So we unfortunately had two people there today instead of our usual three because Andrew was under the weather. But he did get asked in more general, like, what's it been like to have Chip Kelly around? Because whether it was Bill O'Brien or whether it was Chip Kelly, we had sort of put it out there that one of the big benefactors of this new arrangement was going to be Brian Hartline, because it allowed, you know, Brian Day could take this more of a CEO role, and the true offensive coordinator has more time to be a true mentor to Brian Hartline as an offensive coordinator. Before, when it's Ryan Day and he's calling the plays, he's bouncing in and out. He's got so many other responsibilities. I don't know if that dynamic could be the same as it will be now for under someone like Chip Kelly. And Brian Hartline was asked about it, and you could see his face kind of light up that it takes some pressure off of him. And it also is just a great opportunity for him to see how a very successful college coach and offensive coordinator goes about his day to day, gets into his mind a little bit. You know, he and Ryan Day are pretty similar. So it's not like anything maybe Brian Hartline hasn't seen. It's not a different personality type or a different way of thinking about football. But I think it's just it's good for Hartline. Hartline wants to keep growing as a coach, as we all do, like in whatever job we have. Like, you want to keep refining what you're good at, and you want to keep advancing in ways that you haven't been as successful or that you just haven't had as much experience with. And the truth is that Brian Hartline has the offensive coordinator title, but has not really had a lot of offensive coordinator duties. Doesn't call plays, isn't the lead person in developing a game plan. And this arrangement at Ohio State doesn't force him to do those things before he's ready, but puts him in an incredible position to now have two guys that he's learning from who are very well versed, very well accomplished, very well respected in that exact realm. So I thought all along that one of the big winners of this whole thing was Brian Hartline, that there wasn't really a situation, even going back to last year, where he was about to be anointed the play caller. I always thought that was far-fetched. I never thought that was about to happen, and it didn't. And Ryan Day says to us earlier this week that if they hadn't been able to get that top line of guys, and if that second tier of guys for some reason hadn't worked out, then he was just going to keep calling plays himself. He didn't say, then I probably would have just had Brian do it. He said, I would have just called plays myself, because it's a process. And I think Brian Hartline can get there someday. And the way to get him there is to give him experiences like the one he's probably going to have with Chip Kelly in the year ahead.
So in other words, Brian Hartline's answer to how has it been having Chip Kelly here? I'm very happy, because you know, you guys are not going to be asking me schematic questions about this offense. You can just ask me about my wide receiver room, which I'm more than happy to talk about at any time.
He did say something like, I'm sleeping better, which I thought he said in a joking way. There's something like the Ohio State coaches love to talk about that. Ryan Day all the time is like, oh, that's enough to make you lose sleep. It's like, I doubt you sleep a whole lot as it is. I don't see you as someone who's like, oh, I gotta watch Matlock at 9 on Lifetime and then turn in. Like, no, I think you probably get by on as little sleep as you're allowed. So
they sleep on the plane or when they're on their way to the next recruiting.
Right. They have somebody else drive them around to stuff so they can get a quick nap in. I mean, yeah, it's but I just think he's such an interesting guy to me, Brian, projecting again out. Where's Brian Hartline going to be in 15 years? Mm-hmm. And I think wherever he is in 15 years, probably a head coach somewhere by then, frankly. Like in 15 years, maybe he is looking back at 2024, and regardless of where this team goes this year, but just the way, the experience now of Ryan Day moving back to where he's going to be, Chip Kelly taking over as an offensive coordinator, working in tandem with Brian Hartline in some important ways, like how important this could be in continuing his development, continuing his growth as a coach, because he's Ohio State fans don't like to hear it, but he's probably not going to be here as the receivers coach in 15 years or the offensive coordinator. Like, that's a long way off. He will at some point outgrow being the best position coach in the country for his position. Somebody will give him an opportunity beyond that at the college or pro level. So this is an interesting year for him, I think, to be growing kind of behind the scenes, becoming just maturing as a coach. And I don't mean maturing emotionally. I just mean maturing professionally as a coach. And it's just interesting to think about where he's going to be in a decade, in 15 years, and what he's doing at that stage of his career, and how this year could help him become that guy.
Brian Hartline was so good so quick that I think it, some way it was easy to want to rush his development as a coach for a guy who had essentially never done this. And to be frank about it, didn't even have dreams about being a coach. It's just, he moved back to Columbus, wasn't doing much. And Urban Meyer said, hey, come over here and help out. And so I just, now it feels like there's a person here, whether it was Chip Kelly or it would have stuck with Bill O'Brien, because the Boston College never took him away. Brian Hartline gets to continue his normal development as a coach. And I agree with you. 15 years from now, he probably is a head coach somewhere. If that's what he wants to do, I don't even know if that's what he wants to do. Maybe he likes just being a receivers coach. I'm just saying, like, maybe he goes to the NFL and is like, I want to be an NFL receivers coach now. All this is on the table for him, but he's only 5 years into being in a position coach. And it felt like, because it was so successful so quickly, there was this desire from fans to move him up out of fear. Because if you didn't move him up, you were going to lose him, when nothing about what Brian Hartline has said or done has ever suggested that he was actually thinking about leaving Ohio State. And so I think that's, to your point of this benefits Brian Hartline. Hartline gets to go back to doing what normal position coaches in year 5 of being a position coach are doing. And that's still developing as a coach. And then let's check it back in on this in like 2 or 3 years and then see how he feels about maybe being a coordinator who's calling plays and running the game plan and all that other stuff.
Yeah, and I think that's an important distinction. Like, I think fans were wanting to push him up because, again, it's out of that fear of, well, if we don't do it, somebody's going to take him. Right. And I think Ohio State found this is the best middle ground. You get to call him the co-offensive coordinator. He gets to keep growing in that role. You get to pay him like the co-offensive coordinator. But you get to also then bring in someone like a Bill O'Brien or Chip Kelly above him, between him and Ryan Day, to be the true person in charge of the offense. And let Brian Hartline presumably still contribute to the game plan and to the organizational aspects of this with the strengths that he does have.
So we're going to wrap up this. 2 short pods. We closed out last week with a short pod, and we're starting off this week with a shorter pod. But also there's stuff that's going to be happening next week. We'll be back in the Woody on Tuesday talking with Dave. We'll be back in the Woody on Thursday talking with coaches. And then on Saturday, we're expected to watch the full practice, and we're going to pod right after that. But we're going to text it first. 614-350-3315. All news, all analysis, everything you could possibly need in your life as an Ohio State football player. Just text that number. 2-week free trial, $399. After that, for Nathan Baird, I'm Stephen Means, and that was Buckeye Talk.